history with relationships is very bad.
Okay.
Very bad. And I like to do things my way. And so, you know, I've had two disastrous divorces. My daughter is mad at me. And I only try to do the right thing, but I just wasn't going to be pushed around. You know, I wanted to do the right thing. And I tried to very hard. Mm-hmm. And it's happened with lots of people, you know, agents, managers, record producers, you know, where they would try to get me to do something that wasn't right for me. And you know.
That was the iconic singer-songwriter Don McLean talking about that he sucks at relationships and why he wouldn't be a yes man in the business after he was had that huge hit American Pie, and he had a lot of pressure to start writing a lot of poppy songs that didn't mean anything to him. He refused, even though he could have made millions and millions upon millions of dollars. And I really respect his integrity, and it's just a really cool conversation. This guy's a real rebel, and gives us some really cool insight into how that iconic song came about, what it means, what his career has been like, what his personal life has been like, which hasn't been easy. Really introspective, cool conversation, funny guy. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Before we get to the full interview, I was walking down the street in New York City, and I hear a street barker go, "Who wants to get drunk at a comedy club?" He was trying to sell tickets on the street, which a lot of people do in New York for comedy shows. But that was his pitch. Who wants to get drunk at a comedy club? And I got really depressed because I'm a comedian and I work in comedy clubs. And you like to think it's an art form, not just a craft, okay? Not to sound too whatever about it, but, you know, that there's some meaning to what you're doing and purpose. And here's this guy belittling it by just saying, "Hey, who wants to get drunk at a comedy club?" Like, you don't hear that with any other pure art form. Like, you don't hear, "Hey, who wants to get stoned at the ballet? Who wants to shoot up at Macbeth?" I just, it bummed me out for a couple of days. That's all I'm saying. But I do love doing stand-up and hope you guys come check me out. But I did need to get that off my chest because, and by the way, he's right. You can get drunk at a comedy club. So there is an upside. All right. Enjoy Don McLean. Cool conversation. Hope to see you at the club. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week is an amazing singer-songwriter, Grammy Award honoree, songwriter, Hall of Fame member. His major, major killer hit, American Pie, is in the Library of Congress National Recording Registry and was named by the Recording Industry of America a top 5 song of the 20th century. And this year marks the 50th anniversary of that great song, American Pie. It's great to have the astounding singer-songwriter, Don McLean. Great to have you on the show.
Well, nice to be here.
We have a little bit in common. You grew up in New Rochelle and New York. And I was working on Wall Street as a lawyer, investment banker, and then I quit to go into comedy. And I had to sell my apartment in New York City because I couldn't afford to live there. So I moved to a rooming house in New Rochelle at Glen Island Park.
Wow, that was a funky place back in those days. I don't know if it still is, but you know, they had all these big bands would appear out at the Glen Island Casino, and Sinatra sang there, and all the big bands and the singers, Ray Eberly and whatever. And they had dancing in the band shell there. So New Rochelle has a lot of facets to it. And there are many, many famous people that grew up in New Rochelle. And it was right near New York, and everything in show business was in New York City in those days, right up through until the mid-1960s. As a matter of fact, it was a big deal in 1960 or 61 to have anybody broadcasting from California on the radio or on the TV. And there was a show called PM East and PM West. And it was a, its feature was that they were able to have people on both coasts, you know, be on the show. I don't know how they did it, tape or whatever, but then gradually all the action moved out to Hollywood in California, and only pretty much the TV shows are there, like Colbert and those at the Ed Sullivan Theater and whatnot, but and Broadway is there, but everything else is out in and on the West Coast. But we were, you know, still divided by that huge distance between the East and West in 1960. And so everybody lived in New Rochelle, and there are, and one of the great things that's happened to me, I've had many things that happened to me in my life, was that recently New Rochelle put up 9 murals, and one of them is me and Alicia Keys on the side of a building 60 feet tall.
Wow.
And that just took my breath away. I mean, if my father or my mother could see that, I don't know what they would think.
Well, you know, I had read that you said your dad, who unfortunately passed away when you were young, you were 15, and that was very devastating, obviously, but your dad wanted you to go into business. And
yeah,
did you end up sort of gravitating to music because of that New Rochelle environment with all the creative people who were working in New York City, living in that area? Like, what was, what were some of the influences that sort of got you interested in music?
It wasn't like growing up in Nebraska or something, you know. First of all, I had a lot of Christian friends, but I had more Jewish friends than I had Christian friends. And they were much more fun because they were open-minded about stuff, and they were liberal and funny, and crazy things would happen. So they liked me and I liked them. And I never thought about any of this anyway, but it made a difference in terms of thinking outside of the box. And I had been sick a lot growing up with asthma. And I think that I never, ever thought about doing anything my father wanted me to do. Except to mow the lawn. All right. That was about all, you know. I did what I was told. But in terms of what I wanted to do, I had no idea. And you know, by the time you're 15, if you have a father who is putting this in your head, you know, that you should be a doctor, you should be an accountant, you should be a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. You're already thinking that way, you know, and you better study hard in school, and because you'll have to go to college, and da, 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 and that's already in there, you know. Never, nothing, not a thing. I was in my own world.
Yeah.
And so when I discovered the guitar and rock and roll and folk music at the same time, really, that was all she wrote right there, you know, because I didn't want to do anything else. You know, I just wanted to play guitar all day long and learn new things. And it was very hard to learn anything in 1960 about anybody or about anything. You know, there was no, none of this stuff I can call up on my phone, and I can watch Brownie McGee play at Kansas City if I want to. And I knew him. I couldn't have done that. You know, there's no way you could find out anything. You had to really get to know. So what I did was I started to cozy up to some musicians who I admired so I could see how they played stuff and get to know how their head worked and so on. And I did that starting when I was 15 years old. I called different members of the Weavers on the phone. And they were very toxic in those days because they wouldn't sign loyalty oaths. And, you know, they were still considered to be blacklisted. But I was in love with them. And I loved what they did and how they sang and everything. And I loved their story. And that's when I first became aware of what cancel culture was, you know, that, you know, they were canceled immediately, but it didn't stick because they came back in the mid-50s after having their careers ruined in the early 50s. And from then on out, they were the senior members of the whole folk thing. They invented it, you know, and they were fascinating, interesting people. So I created my own path, you know, and it's One of the things that I'm sad about as an old man is that there's nobody I want to know anymore. There really isn't.
What do you mean by that? There's nobody you want. What do you mean by that?
I just don't care, you know, about, I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
Anybody very much. I hate to say that, but, you know, the talk show guys and stuff, you know, going on the Tonight Show with Carson for two times, that was terrifying.
Yeah.
I like that feeling. You know, Johnny Carson was terrifying. And so what was going to happen? You could either be made or ruined, you know, and you just had to be careful.
Right.
You know, but going on with the guys that are there, they're great guys. They're holding their audience, everything else, but they don't bother me. They don't terrify me. I think I would terrify them, actually, more than they terrify me.
I think so. I mean, well, you've talked about, you know, that you've always felt like an outsider in the music business, and that you called your sort of career and maybe your life a struggle, and that you've been a blue guy, that you kind of,
yeah.
Has that changed? Have things softened for you? And why do you feel you were an outsider? Did you bring on that outsider thing, or did it sort of find you? Or
no, my history with relationships is very bad.
Okay.
Very bad. And I like to do things my way. And so, you know, I've had two disastrous divorces. My daughter is mad at me. And I only try to do the right thing, but I just wasn't going to be pushed around. You know, I wanted to do the right thing. And I tried to very hard. Mm-hmm. And it's happened with lots of people, you know, agents, managers, record producers, you know, where they would try to get me to do something that wasn't right for me. And you know.
Well, yeah, you mentioned in an interview Clive Davis, who's incredibly powerful, you know,
yes,
music
guy, yes,
wanted you to start doing more poppy stuff. And you were like, you know, and you just wouldn't do it.
He signed me. He wanted the best for me. He really did. He wanted the best for me. And he knew that if I would sing this bullshit that he was bringing me, and with the right producer, that I would have lots of hit records. He didn't know me. I don't care about hit records. I care about my ideas.
Hmm.
That's all I care about. I care about my ideas. I'm an idea songwriter. I have notions. I want to do a wonderful baby, and I want it to be just like a baby when you hear the song. I want to do infinity, and I want you to think about life after death, you know. I want to do Vincent, and I want to make it sound like nothing anybody ever heard before. I don't want to do Don't Cry Out Loud or some of these songs that his artists had great success. I don't want to have to sing the goddamn thing for the rest of my life. What's that? You're stuck with it.
Yeah, you gotta tour. You gotta tour. Yeah, I know. I'm a stand up, and I go around, and I gotta do this. You know, you gotta refresh your jokes, otherwise you blow your brains out. Say, doing the same thing night in and night out.
That's what Lenny Bruce used to say. You know, he had, you know, we all know Lenny Bruce. He had his, you know, hip smoker reefer. He had all these different. But the one about Ohio, you know, where he goes out, you know, he's, so he'd have to do it. They're like his hits, you know.
Yeah.
He'd have to do them. He made them up on stage.
Yeah.
And then worked them on successive nights, you know, and then all of a sudden they become standards with his people, you know. So I know, but you know what? If you have some things that an audience loves and that you like, you stay with it.
Yeah.
You do. Because they love it and you don't mind it. You like it too.
Yeah.
It's when you're stuck with something that you don't like.
Yeah.
And you have to do it. I would think that is very tough. You know, like Merv Griffin was a singer with a band. He had I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts. would want to sing that song and be nice, you know? No one.
Well, that's how you end up a drug addict. Like you do it,
That's right.
And then you go back and you put it all up your nose and in your veins as a way to get through the 20 other hours in the day. Yeah.
That's right. You know, you've just hit the nail on the head. It's all that empty time that gets people becoming junkies and alkies because they're bored to death. I have many, many interests, music and singing and performing and doing all the things that go along with it. That's one whole area that I love. But I've got 100 other interests. I am an antiquarian, and I am interested in architecture. I have 4 homes, and they're all decorated by me. Every single bit of it is done by me because I love them, and I love being in them, you know, when I've done it.
Yeah.
The way that I want it to be. So I have a lot of in-life horses. I love horses and Western stuff and you name it. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're not stuck with one thing that you're doing and you don't have anything else going on in your brain. That's when
it gets ugly then. For any performer, you know, because we have our bag of issues. We all do, you know. I mean, especially, I think, I always say if my mother hugged me 2 more times, I wouldn't be a comedian. So, and that's what struck me. I mean, in sort of, you know, prepping a bit for the conversation with you, sort of that you really come off as a true artist, you know, in talking about how you want your songs to be timeless and talking about American Pie. And I don't want to get into the details of the lyrics, but overall, you know, that this, you know, was, kind of a look at sort of the lost naivete of the 50s and the tumultuous 60s and your dad died. And that sort of reference to Buddy Holly dying in the song, I assume is kind of also a reference to your dad dying and the effect that that had on you.
There's a lot of death in my work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think I was sort of shocked. I think that Marie Dressler in the movie Dinner at 8 says something wonderful about the fact that Barrymore kills himself and he's seeing this young girl who's the daughter of a friend of Marie Dressler's, and they're talking, and she said it's death is so horribly final. And I thought that really does sum it up in a way. You know, there's that person is never going to say another word. You're never going to have a chance to ever communicate with that person anymore. And it's very final. And so it means that, and I think that is what got through to me when my dad died, is that Don, if you want to be, you're going to be alive however long it's going to be, do what matters to you. Stick to it. Do not do what matters to somebody else. Don't be somebody else's pawn. And if you fail, you fail. And if you succeed, you succeed. But you do it, you know, standing up on your own terms. And that was a principle. And I never sang a song I didn't believe in. And I never said a word I didn't believe anywhere in an interview or on stage. And I never wrote a verse that I did not believe in.
Do you think the fact that you grew up in the 60s allowed you to have that point of view? Because that you know, you talked about like your dad and I, you know, my parents too, they're high school educated, first generation Italian Americans. It's like my son, the doctor, my son, the lawyer, right? And then I was struggling with that. Like when I was, am I going to leave Wall Street and all this security to go into the arts? I was free. I was shitting my pants, right? And because I'm going against everything that society tells you should want. And so what I'm finding with you is, you know, growing up in the 60s where everything was questioned, authority was questioned.
Yes.
Had you not grown up in the 60s, let's say the 70s or 80s, would you have had that same principle?
You are very brave to have done what you did, and my hat's off to you.
Thank you.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. Because, you know, I always had this horrible thought that if I didn't break out and really go for what I was after, that someday somebody I knew was going to say, hey, come on over, Don. You know, you used to think you were going to be a singer. Remember, I bring your guitar.
Oh, my God. I would be the worst. Oh, God.
No, I said, no. It's not going to be me. I'm going to kiss my ass before I do that. So I went, you know, and I failed. And I went back to school. And I was a year behind in college. I went back to college to avoid the draft and to get a degree and all that stuff. I loved it. Mm. But guys I knew in high school who went to the same college were a year ahead of me. They would walk right past me and never talk to me. Because I was a loser. You know, I was a loser for a long time in New Rochelle. I was a loser. People thought of me that way. Who's this silly guy who thinks he's going to be a singer? Ha, ha, ha. You know, well, there's a 60-foot motherfucking mural in my town right now of me on the side of a building. So go look at that, you know. Yes, I am. I am proud that I overcame all that because it was painful.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pain involved, you know, of quitting your job on Wall Street. And when you're on your way and your parents are approving and then dealing with your parents' disapproval, and your friends too, God knows if you still have them, you know,
yeah.
Hard.
Yeah.
You want to, because it makes you happy.
Very lonely. It's very lonely.
Yes.
It's a very lonely existence.
Very, very lonely. That is absolutely right.
And, but let me ask you this. Yeah. But I want to make this more about you, thank you for those kind words. When you were writing American Pie, like it there's so much in there, and you wrote it around 24. Which is amazing that, you know, you would have those perspectives at that such a young age. Were these expressions that you wanted to get out about political and cultural changes in our country and where things were and how you felt about the way things had been going? Were those sort of ideas that were rummaging around in your brain, and the death of Buddy Holly was sort of the switch that ignited this for you? Or did it all just come as you, was it kind of coming out of you as you started to write it?
Well, let me just say this. Bob Dylan wrote Hard Rains Are Gonna Fall. He was probably 20 years old.
Mm.
You know, he wrote some of the greatest songs he ever wrote when he was in his early 20s. You know, young people have a very fresh perspective on life, and also they have their senses are sensitive. So if you're a sensitive person, you smell everything different, you taste everything different, you feel everything different, everything affects you differently. Mm-hmm. I saw a girl that was beautiful, you know, on the bus. I would think about her for a week. And now, you know, women are everywhere, are taking their clothes off, acting like assholes a lot of times. And I don't ever want to see those people. Mm. But I would never forget her sitting on the bus.
Right.
So everything is different when you're young and your life is ahead of you. And the answer is yes to your question. I had a big ideas for songs. I had written quite a few songs that had never been recorded that were very adventuresome. And one of them is a song on the American Pie re-release, the CD called Aftermath. It's just me on the guitar, and I was a really good guitar player in those days. I used to really work at it. I'm lazy now, but and it's a song really about someone in a mental institution thinking about killing people and spending all this time looking at the light coming through the window and all this stuff. I had a lot of ideas because of my sensitivity. And the intelligence, I'd just come through 4 years of college, so I was, you know, sharp mentally. I read everything in philosophy and history, and I was also good with numbers, mostly with odds, really, not numbers, but I'm good at percentages, you know, and what's a good bet, you know, and I'm good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I had these things going for me, and they still are going for me, of course, but they're tired because I'm old, you know, and so, you know, I know how I would feel about something all those years ago, but I can't get that angry anymore.
Right.
You know, right. I just don't do it because it's not good to do and it's pointless and everything else. But, you know, I would lose my temper for 3 days. I would be so fucking mad about something. And now I'm less intense, you know, because of time has, you know, it rubs off the edges, the sea going in and out, you know, rubs the stone round.
Yeah.
Not quite as edgy.
It's all part of being getting old, but that's one of the good things about getting old. And you've talked about sort of like in coming up with the opening verse of American Pie that you just had a tape recorder going in a room. Is that right?
And yes,
you just,
that's right. I wrote the whole thing in one shot. I just spit it out and put it on the machine. I didn't write it. And then I wrote it down. Then I came up with a chorus and I wrote it down. And then I had a bunch of green paper. And I took a bunch of it with me to Philadelphia, and I wrote the rest of the song in an hour.
Unbelievable.
Terminate. I knew what I was after.
Because that stuff had been sitting, you had had these, this was in you already. You were sort of, this stuff was sort of rattling around in your brain.
It always is. Yes, yes, that's correct. And I've spent way too much time talking about my accomplishments and not enough time accomplishing things. Because they have been big accomplishments and people want to know stuff. And I don't like being rude. And I like talking to people. And for example, I won't go out socially with only but one or two people around here or any place. I don't know a lot of people. I don't want to go subject myself to any kind of a social situation because I get cornered and people start to ask me questions. I'm like a rare bird of some sort. And I can't have that. So I turn down any invitation to a party or come over and have a drink. Please don't take this as a negative, but I just can't do that. Okay. Well, okay. So then he's an asshole, you know, because he didn't want to come to my house, but I can't do it.
No, I get it. I get it. I mean, it's, you know, a lot. Yeah.
I'm in this position, but I have a few friends and we go out and we have a lot of laughs and I can say anything I want, you know, and I say a lot of crazy stuff. I like to push boundaries and think about things. And I hate this political correctness where everybody has to watch every goddamn word they say, you know, and everybody's offended by everything. Mm-hmm. It's killing comedy.
I know.
It's killing songwriting. It's killing everything.
Yeah, it's bad.
And where is it coming from? It's coming from a bunch of born again left wing Puritans who were, you know, doing drugs and sleeping around and doing everything you could think of back when it was all right to get it to do. But now all of a sudden they found religion and they're out there telling everybody how they have to live.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's so true. Hey, listen, it's the 50th anniversary of American Pie. You have a tour. It is Don McLean. It is such a treat to talk to you, and I want to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Don McLean. He's like a throwback. I love how unapologetic he is. And of course, the song, the top five song of the century. So 20th century, pretty amazing. And send the links around for the podcast, everybody. Tell your friends. See you next week.